Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
In this week's episode, I'm joined by Emily Fair. Emily is the founder and CEO of Juniver, an award-winning health company that's transforming the way we approach eating disorders. Juniver is the first digital therapeutic of its kind, providing on-demand 24/7 support through an app, including a personalized AI-powered recovery coach. Juniver's mission to improve access to effective help for people with eating disorders is deeply personal to Emily, born from her own recovery journey, which highlighted the gaps in traditional care. Before founding Juniver, Emily's career spanned sales strategy and partnerships at organisations like White Cube Gallery and Sotheby's. She brings a wealth of experience scaling teams and leading with empathy. This week's episode, we talk all about changing habits, the important things to note when you're changing habits and fighting back against urges, and also bringing that to the festive season and how to navigate urges during this holiday. Oh, Emily, it's so lovely to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Hannah. I'm excited for this conversation.
Yeah, it's so nice. I love it when I go to conferences now. And I mean, I sound a bit big-headed saying this, but because I've been within the space for a couple of years now, I feel like when I go, I'm kind of seeing familiar faces and catching up with friends. But then when I get to meet someone new, I love it. So I'm so glad that I got to meet you at the conference.
Same, reciprocally.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are going to be talking about a couple of different things today, but we're firstly going to be speaking about Juniver. And I wondered if for the listeners, maybe if you wanted to start with a little bit about yourself and then maybe tell us a bit about Juniver as well.
Yeah, sure. I started Juniver because it was the solution I needed when I was battling an eating disorder. So Juniver is the first digital therapeutic for eating disorders. We deliver help instantly anytime you need it through an app. And the app contains a content curriculum that's rooted in behavioral science, tools, peer support, and an AI-powered chat functionality that's trained to deliver the advice of a therapist in that context. So what an eating disorder specialist would say in that context. And that gets personalized to your specific preferences and needs. So it can be used as a standalone for those who don't have other treatment, or can complement treatment that some of our members are following. And I really, you know, in my journey through recovery, was lucky enough to access therapy. And I felt it was not when I was seeing my therapist, so not at noon on a Wednesday, that I had a problem. It was really every moment around that. And it's very much echoed in our members. I think, you know, all of us who have experience with disordered eating or an eating disorder know that it shows up, it manifests in our life and in our brains like an addiction. So it's really important to have help anytime, anywhere, because it's unpredictable when urges hit and we feel alone and really in need of support in those moments.
Yeah, it sounds brilliant. And I think it feels particularly kind of prominent at the moment with there's so many people struggling and it's difficult to access care. And for the individuals that can access the app, is that for all different types of eating disorders or is there a specific type of eating disorder it helps with?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We were right-sized, I would say, for mild to moderate presentations. So all types of eating disorders, but probably not on the higher acuity side where higher levels of care are needed. Mm-hmm. That said, we often help people step down from higher levels of care because often you're thrown back into a world full of triggers with no support. Mm. So helping those patients get support and maintain the outcomes that they've attained in treatment is effective through a flexible platform like Juniver's. So anyone can use it. And we really frame it as if you want to change your relationship with food, try us out. We have a mm-hmm. freemium model, to your point on access. We definitely see that being problematic. We know that the wait times in the UK are very long for access to specialist care. And in the US, similarly, there are barriers to access in the form of cost and stigma and the complexity of navigating the care system. So we have a solution that you can download on your terms. It's available on the App Store. And we have a freemium model. So you access a large part of the program for free anytime that you need it and wherever you are in your journey.
Mm. That's amazing. I think, you know, resources like this for people that are struggling, they're just so important. So thank you so much for, you know, on behalf of people struggling with eating disorders, thank you so much for putting this together. And I'm really interested in like the technology behind it. So you mentioned that, you know, it responds to you kind of whenever you're struggling, and it would respond, you know, how somebody that's supporting you with an eating disorder would respond. How does it know like what to say, or how does it even, you know, how do you communicate with it?
Yeah, that's also a very good question. So we have an app that has an interface that's the landing page of the app is the chat. And we call the chat Junie, and people, you know, associate plenty of things with Junie. So they'll put a gender to it. They'll put a voice to it. So they have, they build relationships with Junie that are very unique, which is great to see. And they really trust Junie to deliver helpful advice. We also, beyond helpful advice, wanted to ensure that it was going to be safe for all eating disorder use cases. So we trained an AI model on our content curriculum. So the content curriculum that's in the app, that's the product of 2.5 years of R&D, looking at the latest behavioral science with regards to eating disorders. And then we also trained it on interactions with the app and decision trees that we built. So for example, if you were to ask Junie for ideas about what to eat during the day, then you were to say, well, that feels like a lot of food, or I'm not sure how to, you know, accommodate that in my day, Junie will help you break it down so that it feels achievable and doable rather than reduce those quantities. That's one example. Another example might be that you have, you know, other mental health issues, and some of those can be serious. So we've set it up so that you have access to resources when you're showing signs that you actually need more support than what's in the app. And that's where I think, you know, it can be really valuable to partner with clinicians, which we do a lot, and which our members do as well. So they'll use Junie in combination with other treatment. But again, you know, I think we are, the majority of our members use us independently and come to Junie because it is really appropriate and understands their experience, which is, you know, often overwhelming, certainly unique, of going through an urge and overcoming challenges that the day-to-day life presents when you have an eating disorder.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you were saying there about those urges, I think that what I found particularly in my own recovery was, as you were saying, you know, you go to your therapy on a Wednesday, all well and good, you know, you might be in a good frame of mind, you might be in a bad frame of mind when you attend that therapy session. And that can then kind of, you know, impact how successful mm-hmm. that therapy session is. But when you're in that moment and you have an urge and you don't have access to your therapist, right. It can be so difficult to, like, you know, to know how to tap into things. I think I definitely found as recovery progressed, you know, tapping into those coping mechanisms and support mechanisms when I had those urges felt easier. But particularly when you're at the start and you're just mm-hmm. like, how am I supposed to overcome this
right.
when I feel like I'm, you know, completely here on my own? So I can imagine having Junie there with you helps so much to kind of, you know, remind you of the different things that you have access to in order to get through those urges.
Absolutely. And the, you know, the experience of having an urge, and I'm sure your audience is familiar with what that feels like, but it's often, you know, what's confounding about disordered eating is that we're often compelled to do something that we ultimately don't want. And on mm-hmm. the other side of engaging with that behavior, it's quite upsetting to see ourselves land in the place that we really wanted to avoid landing in. And we do this over and over again. And mm-hmm. Having an urge is that really disorienting experience of being having a voice in your mind that, you know, prompts you to do something that your better self, so to speak, would actually not encourage you to do. But that voice, that better self, has gone offline in that moment. And so what Junie helps you do is hear that higher self or that better self come back online and really equip you with the rationale, the empowered feeling of actually, no, I don't want to do this. I want to promote my recovery and do something that's going to support it right now. And we talk about this in the program, and I'm sure we'll touch on it too. But when we think about recovery, there are really two pillars to it. One is doing something different when an urge comes up. So instead of engaging with your default behavior, you're going to do something different. And then the second pillar is around ensuring that you're eating regularly and enough for your body's needs. Now, both of those things are essentially what recovery is made of. It sounds much easier said than done. And so we help you in, you know, unpack what that looks like in practice. And similarly to therapy, I think, you know all these things, but the difficulty is when you're confronted to triggers, when you're confronted to challenging mm-hmm. moments, it's really putting those skills into practice and developing them and growing them. So again, this in the moment intervention is really helpful from that perspective. But essentially having an urge is that crucial moment of, mm-hmm. okay, I have a path to decide on and I'm going to choose the better option. That's really hard to do when you feel overwhelmed by a compulsive moment. So helping you really see, okay, actually on the other side of this, let's play it out. What is this binge going to lead to? Where are you going to land? You know, you see in your mind right now, this, you know, glorious moment of compulsively overeating all the foods that you've denied yourself. Actually, on the other side of that is a lot of pain and hurt. And let me remind you of that. And then let's think about what you could do that could delay that urge until it dissipates enough for it mm-hmm. not to feel overwhelming. And then let's also think about what you might want to do so that those foods aren't going to feel so appetizing because you're actually incorporating them into your day-to-day eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what you said there about the two pillars of recovery and one of them being doing something differently when an urge arises, like that just resonated with me so much because I remember so many times in recovery, like I'd spend countless hours in therapy talking about, you know, particular instances and difficult feelings and things like that. And I remember just having this like moment where I was like, oh my God, I've just got to do it. Mm-hmm. Like I've got to stop talking about it and I've just got to do it. And it's like you said, it sounds so easy to say you just got to do it, but it, you know, it's one of the most painful things you could possibly mm-hmm. put yourself through. And I think it's one of those things as well that like, even, you know, I definitely found the Full of Beans community to be so supportive in terms of, you know, people reaching out and asking how I was doing and stuff. But when you're in that moment, it definitely feels like you are very alone mm-hmm. and people don't know necessarily how you're feeling and stuff. So I can imagine, you know, having Junie alongside with you constantly so that you can kind of discuss those concerns and kind of, you know, with help of changing your mindset around it, you know, really important to, yeah. And I think almost so, you know, initially I was thinking like, would you feel like you had that personal connection? But almost in a way, I think because it isn't a actual mm-hmm. physical person, they don't have their own biases or mm-hmm. like their judgment. So it feels like a very free space where someone understands what you're talking about and what you're saying, but won't hold any judgment against you.
Exactly. And it's funny that you mentioned this because we just had a member write in and say, I tell Junie things I've always been too ashamed to say out loud. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there is this huge shame and stigma around eating disorders, which is unfortunate considering how prevalent they are. And, you know, I think one of the things I want to say to your audience and to everyone out there who's listening is eating disorders occur in 1 in 10 people. They're all around us. They're invisible, as many of us know. And so it's really important for you to remember that this isn't about this. It's not your fault. These are learned behaviors that have been anchored in your brain and in your life through practice, but they can be unlearned. And hearing this message is important also in moments of urges when indeed we tend to feel isolated. We tend to feel like what is wrong with me? Why can't I change this behavior that's ruining so much of my life, so much of the good in my life? It's eroding. How can I not see and do better? And in fact, you know, being hard on ourselves makes it harder to recover. And we can maybe touch on that later on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, let's touch on it now. I think it's such a key part of recovery is having that compassion for yourself mm-hmm. and acknowledging that, like, recovery is potentially one of the most difficult things that you're going to do in your life, because it's going against everything that your head is telling you to do. Right. You know, you're having to face your biggest fears and things that feel incredibly uncomfortable. And I definitely, you know, I sit here now in a very much more recovered position than a year ago. And I was thinking the other day about how everyone would say, you know, it's going to be worth it, and, you know, what mm-hmm. have you. And you just sit there and think, yeah, but it's so painful.
Yeah.
Like, how can this be worth it? I don't understand. And then when you actually hear people saying it, it's kind of, you know, if I'm being honest, it's hard to actually say that life is going to be better, because when you're in the eating disorder and that's all you know, it does feel very difficult to break out of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think it's very hard to imagine a life beyond it. And certainly it's intangible, the joys and the ways that you feel more aligned with yourself and with your values. You know, this is something that comes up a lot with our members is, you know, I don't live a life that's aligned with my values. And recovering that is incredible. Your life expands, but you're more empowered within it, more aligned with yourself, with your true self within this expanded life. But mm-hmm. indeed, it's very hard to see that and to be reminded of that, because it's so abstract when you're in the process of recovering or when you're in your eating disorder. And I think mm-hmm. on the point that we were touching on about having a voice in your mind that's going to remind you of those things, but that's also going to support you through challenges and slips, for lack of a better term, we really need to practice better self-talk, less self-criticism, so that we're in a position where we develop skills that we were perhaps not taught of self-care, of self-respect, of showing ourselves that we matter. And that can happen in very small ways, and in fact, often starts in very small ways. And I would really invite everyone who's listening to, you know, think about perhaps, and Hannah and I talked about this in advance of recording, you know, when we think about the season ahead, this holiday season that we have ahead of us, many of your listeners are likely feeling anxious. It can be a really thorny moment of the year. Celebrations tend to be around food. Family can be, you know, could be unique and sometimes triggering and challenging, full of joy as well. But, you know, and some families are so supportive, and others for many, you know, maybe that's going to be a different experience. So what can we do to set ourselves up for success, and how can we better define success so that we are not doomed to fail? I think we have in recovery, or certainly when, you know, you're in an eating disorder, we tend to have black and white thinking, right? So success and recovery feels sometimes overwhelming because we think of it in a monolithic way, and we're either good or bad. Food is either good or bad, and our behavior is one or the other. So in this Christmas period, I would invite you to think about these two pillars of recovery. So the dismissing an urge when it comes up, and setting yourself up for eating regularly and enough for your body. What can you do from now that's going to encourage recovery promoting behaviors? And lean into what is small. Think about it not as, oh, well, I'm not going to binge for the next 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Until the end of the year, I want to start the 2025 in a good place. I'm not going to do anything that could be qualified as disordered eating from now to then. And then start 25, I'll be reset. I'll have all of this behind me. You know, I think it can be tempting, and it's often symptomatic of the eating disorder to think like that. unfortunately, it's not helpful. And so what we want to think about instead is, okay, what can I do today that's going to be small, achievable, and recovery promoting? Mm-hmm. And that can be, I'm going to add some protein to my breakfast. And I can start there and do that for a few days. Or it can be, I'm going to ensure that I'm going to sleep enough, because I know that sleep typically triggers disordered eating behavior. And I notice this pattern, I'm going to try and sleep 7 hours a night just for two nights in a row and see how I feel around that. Maybe it could be, you know, when I'm drinking a lot, that tends to trigger me the next day. So I'm going to try and curb my alcohol intake so that I can feel better about myself. We know that hangovers can also lead to feelings that are sometimes often challenging. So how do we think about alcohol intake in this holiday season? It can be what works for you, but scan the past few weeks and look at what maybe you want to tweak. And again, think about what's achievable and be realistic about that. So think very carefully. I want this goal to be something I can do easily. And so the more specific the goal, the more likely you are to achieve it. So have this plan that is small, actionable, and specific. And then the other thing I would say is put this new habit that you've designed, tag it on to something that you already do. If you've never woken up early to go to the gym, but you've always intended to, it's not going to happen tomorrow. So instead, if you think, oh, I tend to have high energy or a stress to take out in the evenings, I'm going to do a yoga class once a week on this day. And I'm going to take my kit in the morning and here it is packed up. And I'm going to do that on a Wednesday. So look at what you already do or what you're inclined to do rather than set goals that you're not going to meet because historically you haven't met them. And then the other important, the two other things I will say about planning for this season are experiment and tweak as you go. And this was probably the most exciting part of my recovery journey is thinking about it with curiosity and with a lot of compassion, which was not my default. And so I think that also takes some practice, but look at it as this experiment that you're running. What am I learning about myself? What am I noticing are triggering situations for me? What am I noticing about my hunger? You know, hunger and fullness signals are often blurred in recovery and through disordered eating. And so what can we learn about what enough looks like for our bodies, right? That's such, again, thorny question. Am I eating enough? I don't know. Am I eating the right types of food? We live in a culture that has so much messaging around, you know, what to eat and how to eat it. So really thinking about what am I learning about my body and my behavior that I can implement in my day-to-day life. So I would recommend a couple or 3 days of incorporating this new habit, this new behavior into your life, something really small, and then seeing how you feel. Has it moved the needle a little bit? How are you feeling after your breakfast that's now a little bit more substantial? How are you feeling about this new movement that you've incorporated in your life where you're feeling a little bit more connected to your body because you're moving it in different ways? So experiment and tweak. And then the other fourth piece of it is to celebrate your success. And I don't say this because we should love ourselves, which is also something I think we all have to work on in disordered eating recovery, but more that's what reinforces and cements learning. It's really important after you have a win. And again, if it's something small, like you've put an egg into your breakfast, that's amazing. Celebrate that. That's a change. That's a change towards something that's going to promote healthier eating and healthier behavior around food. Celebrate it. And that will in turn lead to more behaviors coming into your life and gelling. So just to recap, start small, really small, actionable things that you can do in your life today. Be very realistic. If there's a part of you that says, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do that, cut it down. Make it smaller. Maybe it's not an egg for breakfast because you're not sure. You've never eaten breakfast in recent days. So it could be an affirmation. You're going to wake up and you're going to say to yourself, I'm worthy and I'm enough. Or this is going to be a good day. That could be your aim for the next 3 days. So start small. Second, look at what you're already doing. So your inclinations, potentially your strengths, identify where this habit is going to live based on data from your past. Don't have this idea of yourself that's vastly different from how you've showed up so far. Third, experiment and tweak. Take it with a lot of curiosity and really lean into, I think that's very exciting about recovery. You're recovering a part of yourself that has not been available to you. And so you're discovering yourself. I think that could be a good angle for this holiday season of, okay, there'll be challenges. What am I going to learn about myself? And how can I tweak my behavior to really foster a better experience for myself and for my relationship with food? And then fourth, celebrate success. Don't be shy about it. Don't feel, and I can already hear perhaps some of you thinking, oh, if it's a small goal like that, it's not going to, it's trivial. It's not worth celebrating. It's absolutely worth celebrating because we know that neurologically, it's going to have an impact on learning. So if you don't believe in that celebration because you think the step is too small, celebrate just for the impact it's going to have on your brain. I'll pause here. Hannah, you have any questions? Otherwise,
no, I think that's such incredible advice. And I guess just to add perspective from my side, I think that so often when it comes to this time of year, we put so much pressure on having to do things a certain way, whether that's kind of traditions that you have in the past or expectations of what Christmas quote unquote should be. Engaging in things that actually right now feel completely out of your comfort zone. And I think one thing I definitely found really helpful was to just be really compassionate with myself and meet myself where I am now. Like you said, be curious, be compassionate. And I think that really helped me to actually then not only kind of take a step back and think about, okay, where am I at now? What is achievable? But then, like you said, to make them realistic, to implement things or to try things that felt, they were a challenge, but they didn't feel like a life-ending challenge. They felt like a challenge that I could face and felt that was okay. But doing that with in line again with, as you said before, like with your values and with your morals. And, one thing that I think people will say is like, oh, well, you have to have a Christmas dinner at X time, or, you need to be at this social event, or there's a lot of pressure put on us. And actually thinking about, what's going to be right for me in this moment and for my recovery as well, because I think there is a tendency as well to say, oh, well, I have an eating disorder, therefore, I can't do that. And actually, as difficult as it is, I also think this is a great time of year to push yourself as far as is comfortable. Like, I'm not saying to do things that, make you feel extremely anxious and not enjoy your time. But I think what you were saying earlier about like habit formation and stuff, this is a time where actually, things will be out of routine. You'll have events that you wouldn't typically go to. Your routine might be a bit askew. And whilst that can cause quite a lot of panic, it can also be a great time to kind of those habits that you have that aren't serving you and that are very eating disorder focused to break those habits. And then, like you said, to build in new habits. So, if you do try something that feels really difficult in your recovery, then to form a habit afterwards of finding self-compassion or finding self-care, because then once you've done that, then the next time that you do something that feels difficult, you'll automatically have that self-compassion or self-care and you'll have access to that. And then you can build on that and strengthen it. So I think whilst it can be a very difficult time with a lot of pressure and a lot of stress, if you're able to shift your mindset and see this less as, oh my God, it's Christmas, this is such a panic, there's so much food, and see it as, okay, I know what my boundaries are and I know the things that feel possible and don't feel possible. Where am I gonna, you know, challenge myself? Where am I gonna need a bit of time to step back? And just really leaning into what you need. I think it can actually be a really good time to progress in recovery.
Absolutely. And again, take it as the opportunity to really discover things about yourself. It's a project of self-discovery, recovery is. And I echo everything you said, in particular around Christmas being a period where perhaps we don't do things because we have an eating disorder. But conversely, I think some of us might do everything because we haven't learned how to set boundaries. And so I would also invite the audience to think about how they want to practice healthy boundary setting. So what does that look like? You have stretch goals, as Hannah, you know, showed. There are moments where you possibly might be thinking, I can't do that. Well, actually, is there something I can try that's going to be a step towards more flexible thinking in my journey? And then on the other side of the spectrum, you might be someone who is often saying yes to everything. And in fact, you say yes to things that are confronting to you and challenge your recovery and are not helpful for what you want to achieve. And so in those moments, what are those moments? This is the first step. What do you want to identify ahead of time as moments that could be ones that you might need to step away from or that you might want to create boundaries around? An example of that could be a meal, a conversation at a meal. So, you know, somebody might often tell you something that you find, you know, regrettable and difficult and maybe inappropriate if it's a comment about your weight or about what's on your plate, about other parts of your life. So maybe have a sentence that you've practiced ahead of time that you can say out loud to a group of people to really indicate that that's where you'd like the conversation to end. So have that also in your toolkit, so to speak. And another thing I'll add about Juniver is we have a peer support community on the app, and that's part of the freemium model. So there's no cost associated to joining. And that's also a great place to find some comfort and some solidarity. I think Christmas is going to be, you know, a difficult moment for all of us, but also the opportunity to show others that we're here and that we're here for them, which can also, you know, if you think about it for your own recovery, really empower you. Oh, I can give advice to others. I know something about recovery. I know something about this one thing that I have in my life and that I've learned and someone can benefit. So I would invite you to think about that too. Who can you reach out to that's going to feel safe and that's going to be available to you in those moments? And creating not just boundaries and practicing those boundaries, because that's not going to happen overnight, but practicing voicing what your needs are. The other thing is also creating some space around difficult situations. So in the moment of a meal, plan on, you know, where you can go for a quick break if you need. So maybe that's outside for a moment. Maybe that's somewhere in another room where you excuse yourself, you go reflect, you go take a, you know, a deep breath and you come back and you're more composed. Anything that's grounding when you're confronted with large amounts of food that are sometimes foods that you know can be triggering to you, and also family members or large social contexts that also can be triggering. Having those planned moments of a break can make a big difference in just allowing you to stay aligned with how you want to show up for yourself in that moment.
Yeah, I think I really like what you said there about just having lots of things in place. And I think you kind of you picked up on it when you were talking about like setting yourself challenges and stuff like that, is don't give yourself room to not have access to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like you were saying before, if you want to have an egg for your breakfast, then have eggs in the fridge. And I think it's very similar in terms of coping mechanisms and different strategies. If you know that having, let's say you're away with the family for Christmas and you know that there's going to be periods of time where you may need to have some time on your own, then make sure that you have a space where you can go that means that you can have that downtime. And, you know, communicate that to your family beforehand so that maybe they don't think, oh, you know, what's going on, or they're worried mm-hmm. about you. They know that you're, you know, you're just having some time on your own. And which, you know, I think, eating disorder or not, we all forget yeah. very overwhelmed at Christmas. And there's so many you know, interactions and pressures put on us that I think we all need that space. So even, you know, when you add need disorder on top, it makes it more difficult. But equally, you know, if you, you know, have a difficult family environment and maybe they don't understand what's going on, then, you know, communicating to a friend that at some point you may feel that you just need to text them and have a conversation, mm-hmm. and to put that in place beforehand so that when you're in that moment of panic, you don't stress, oh my God, I don't have access to anything right now. Yeah. Which is where I think the community support group that you have with Jennifer sounds amazing, because they're going to be people that, you know, will understand what you're going through and be able to provide support. But also there's definitely something to be said for when you're able to support somebody. I think that, you know, naturally as human beings, we do want to help. So when you are able to support someone, I think that can also make you feel better in yourself as well. So I think that sounds like a brilliant strategy for when things do get difficult.
Absolutely. And Junie is also another example. If you don't have a friend that you've admitted that you have a problem with or that you're comfortable mm-hmm. sharing that with, Junie is also a good place to go and exchange with. I also wanted to add a point to what you said, which was, you know, great about creating some space and being and planning and preparing your family potentially around, you know, just the need for little breaks here and there. The other thing that you might want to think about is preparing snacks. It may sound counterintuitive, but eating regularly is one of the pillars that we talked about. And in the holiday context, what tends to happen, often happens, is you'll have one large meal and you'll restrict the rest of the time, or two large, whatever it may be. You'll have a different pattern that is not necessarily helpful to your recovery. So whilst that's also acceptable and very, you know, if that's your choice, that's if that's how you want to celebrate, that's also important to really meet your emotional needs as well as your physical needs. But if you are feeling fragile about your eating habits and that and find that large meals can be difficult, I encourage you to really plan your snacks and be very diligent about eating them. So eating at regular intervals will make those large meals much more manageable. If you arrive mm-hmm. at the table and you haven't eaten in 5 hours, you're putting yourself in a vulnerable place. If on the contrary, you've had your regular meals, you've had your protein-filled breakfast, you've had some, you know, my go-to snack that I carry even to this day, I have a snack at all times in my bag because sometimes I'm traveling, a meeting will end later and so I'll skip my moment to get something. So I always have something, you know, satisfying to snack on mm-hmm. in my bag. And I would really invite you to think about that in the same way. And you can plan your own snacks. You know, there's also, I think, pressure to consume what's there for you. You can prepare your own things and arrive with your preferred snacks at a family gathering. And I would also practice saying something, you know, having a ready phrase for anyone who maybe, you know, questions the fact you're eating between meals or whatever it may be, whatever you're likely to hear, maybe prepare yourself for that, but also hold your boundary because you know what's going to serve your recovery, and eating regularly is certainly something to prioritize.
Yeah, I think that was something I found super tricky, you know, because it is really important that you eat regularly. But during the Christmas period, there can be a lot of like, oh, I'm skipping lunch because we're having a big dinner and things yeah. like that. And so for anyone that is listening and is thinking, well, you know, everyone else is skipping food,
yeah.
so I can skip food, really important to hold on to the fact that you are in recovery from an eating mm-hmm. disorder. They are not. And mm-hmm. that right now it's really important for you to eat regularly. And something I have found as well is that even now, much closer to recovery, I'm not a big meal kind of person. I prefer to eat little and often, and that's totally okay. So if when it comes to the meal and everyone else is having massive portions and you don't want to do that, that is totally fine as well. I think there's a massive normalization over consumption mm-hmm. around Christmas. But I think what's really important is being honest with yourself. And if you're sat at the meal thinking, I'm still hungry, but I don't want to eat because I ate earlier and no one else did, I think that's a time to reflect and think, what's going to be more positive for my recovery here? Because there's a difference between I'm eating a small meal to restrict, or I'm eating a small meal because I feel satiated right now, and that's just my preference of how I like to eat.
Absolutely. And I would also encourage people to remember that we are in early recovery. It's very difficult to trust your hunger and fullness signals. Those are going to not be available to you. And so thinking around, well, this is going to be what I'm going to eat at this meal. So you have a sense of, okay, this is the type of food that's going to be served. This is the type of plate I'm going to put together. And you remove the decision-making from the moment of eating. Again, this is for people who are feeling fragile, as is often the case in early recovery. Planning ahead so that when you're at the table, you're not having to make decisions. Because that can be really challenging in the context of a Christmas dinner. So think, okay, this is what's going to be served. I'm going to have this, and that's what I'm going to end my meal with. And then I'm going to have a snack a little bit later. I'm going to have this snack a little bit earlier. So you've already, planned your meals and your snacks and removed that decision-making from the action of eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Emily, thank you so, so much. I feel like this episode is so jam-packed with tips and advice for people. And I think it's going to be really, really helpful for people stepping into Christmas, which I've just realized as I've said, that is actually a song, isn't it? So I feel like that was very, very well-timed of me. Where can people go to find out more about Juniver and get access to the support that you guys provide?
They can come to our website and they can download the Juniver app. So it's Juniver on the App Store. And we are really pleased to offer a discount code for your listeners. So if they want the premium, which includes unlimited use of Juni, the chat functionality that gets personalized, the more you use it and more helpful, the more you use it. That is Juni, Juni, and then FOB for full of beans. So Juni, FOB, all in all caps, connected. And so, yeah, hopefully we're helpful to your listeners, and would love to be in touch with them on our social media platforms. We're on Instagram, we're on TikTok, and you can again download the app and review it and share thoughts on the community. We always love to hear what's helpful, what's not. And we all, we'll be thinking about you in this season and in early January, and hope you feel empowered by some of the things we've talked about. Thank you, Hannah, for having me.
Oh, thank you so much, Emily. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks. Take care. Bye.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode. So be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.